Hello and a big welcome back to Expected Goals, the Brighton Albion podcast. Here now for an Xmas special, or Expected Miss from an analytics perspective. Charlie Benny, how are you after this weekend's proceedings?
Very good after that opening pun. Feeling excited for Christmas on this Christmas Eve evening. Disappointed, obviously, after the result at the weekend, which was a bit of a shock to the system. But yeah, all in all, feeling good. Looking forward to the Christmas busy period of fixtures.
Yeah, most definitely. Obviously, a disappointing result. We won't touch too much on it, as we don't want to sort of ruin the Christmas festive spirit. A couple of things I did see sort of knocking about as well. Regards to VAR now, we're apparently top. I don't know how reliable this information is. Apparently top for sort of decisions overturned in our favour. Apparently, we've now had five. The first one on Saturday, me and you'd obviously spoken in the concourse, literally 10 minutes prior to kickoff, about can we not concede from a corner today? And I thought, as Chris Basham headed in after about 6 minutes, I thought, here we go. That one I was surprised got overturned. Not so much the second goal that they had ruled out, as he looked, from where I was, he looked quite offside. What did you make of sort of our defending from set pieces and VAR on Saturday?
Yeah, I think Graham Potter mentioned that he didn't think it was a 0-0 game and a mistake. I think he's probably a little bit off with that estimation. With the chances that we conceded, and obviously our abysmal marking at set pieces, it could have been 3 or 4 without the VAR interventions. They were the correct calls, I have to say. There weren't any mistakes. It was a handball and it was offside, and they were relatively clear. So it wasn't too controversial, but our defending has got to be a lot better. I'm not really sure what happened with Matty Ryan coming for the ball and just completely missed it, made a massive, massive error. I'm not even sure who was meant to be picking up Chris Basham, actually. I need to go back and have a look at that, because I kind of glossed over it a little bit. I thought we got away with it at the time. But no, big improvements needed. Spurs, looking forward, I'm not certain they've scored too many goals from set pieces. I know they got a late winner at Wolves, Jan Vertonghen, with a late header. So we'll have to be wary, as with every team. But it can't carry on like this, because we're just throwing away points.
No, big time. Couldn't agree with you more on that front. And set pieces, of course, not always a nice way to concede, you know. Seem quite avoidable, a lot of the errors that come for those. Just a couple of numbers I'll throw at sort of the listeners. From Sheffield United, our fourth lowest shot accuracy of the season, 22%. Shots on target, which obviously isn't great. The three that have been worse than that were Chelsea away, Leicester at home, and Newcastle away. So all of which games we also failed to score in. So quite a common trend there. Our second lowest touches in the box for any home game. Everton surprisingly being our lowest. And of course, we scored three times there. So perhaps proving touches in the box aren't essential. But that's probably more a reflection of all the possession that we sort of had and sort of failed to break down. Excellently well drilled, it must be said, Sheffield United side, who you can see why they've done so well since sort of January. Away from home, a lot of people were saying every team seems to apparently have an off day against Sheffield United this season. I think it's more a case of how good they are, and a lot of credit to Chris Wilder in that respect. But speaking of set pieces, that's the joint second highest set pieces we've had in any home game this season. I just felt that we didn't really seem to maximise them very well. Not sure if part of that's down to Gross coming off sort of at half time, but I just felt that, you know, we could have done a lot better from set pieces, and we had 28 penalty area entries in total, or final third entries. Just 7 of those came from central areas, so 3/4 from wide areas. Again, perhaps showing how we struggled to break them down. And again, with the majority of our crosses, 7 of those came from the right-hand side of the 8 that were accurate. So perhaps we were facing a side who did a lot of what we did well last season. I think of forcing teams out wide, not letting them have that nice central space. But, you know, as you mentioned, a lot to look forward to now. The Spurs we've spoken about, quite poor this season. What's your assessment, Charlie, of Spurs so far this season, and perhaps now under Mourinho as well?
I think, yeah, it's not been a great start for them. I was very surprised to see Pochettino go. However, he is clearly an exceptional manager. But they've brought in one of the best in the business in Mourinho, who, you know, whatever you think of him, he's a proven winner and will hopefully kind of bring that ruthless streak to them from a Spurs fan's perspective. I certainly think they're still susceptible if we can get... I'd like to see two up front when we play them on Boxing Day. I want to see us put them under pressure. I watched the game that they played against Chelsea, and Chelsea were far better in every department, controlled them, completely. The sending off, whilst it was a headline, was essentially immaterial. The game was always within Chelsea's control. I think maybe a more clear indication of what we can, what we might be able to achieve was the Sheffield United game against Spurs. That Sheffield United went to Tottenham's new beautiful sparkling stadium and played them off the park, and they got away with it a little bit. Spurs, they really should have lost that game. They were completely dominated. They scored completely against the run of play to kind of curb Sheffield United back a little bit. But they are, when put under pressure, they are certainly susceptible, I think, to a high press. I don't think they play through the lines particularly well. Dele Alli's come into a bit of form, so he will be a threat if they can find him in the pocket. So we might have to be wary of that. But I think that we can impress our game onto them. It's just whether some of the players who had particularly poor games on Saturday can turn in a better performance, or if Potter decides to rotate and bring in a few changes, maybe they can do better.
Definitely. No, I couldn't agree that more, to be honest with you. You've got to remember a side that we went to last season in their flashy new stadium, as you say. We frustrated them for sort of 87, 88 minutes, and it only sort of took a wonder strike from Christian Eriksen to stop us going away with anything. So if we can go in there with that sort of defensive structure that Blades have shown you can do as well, just quickly pulled up their expected goal numbers. When they played Sheffield United, they both scored the same in terms of expected goals and actual goals scored. So, as you mentioned, not sort of an invincible side at home. Completely sort of unrelated analytical note. They charge you to drop a backpack at the ground as well. They apparently don't let your backpacks in the ground when I went. They were like, oh, there's no room for them or something. I was like, but you had a room for a cheese board in the stadium, but not my backpack. So I was like, okay, fine. And they charge you, I think it was £10 to drop the backpack, which isn't a deposit, by the way. They keep the £10. Evidently, they're struggling with that £100 million TV revenue they get every season. So yeah, that just quite annoyed me, to be honest with you, which is completely non-analytical. But I thought I'd let the people know that.
If you're listening, yes. Daniel Levy, just, you know, sort it out, basically. It's not on.
So as we were cancelled out in the week, as Charlie mentioned, for misspelling of Gary Stevens, which I'd again like to sincerely apologise for. I'd like to request Daniel Levy is cancelled this Christmas due to backpack issues. But going back to Spurs, a few numbers. They've actually scored lower on average than their opponents in terms of expected goals this season. They've shot less than their opponents, conceded in four of their last five games this season. And within those last five, they've actually scored 11 goals, which is quite a good return. But that's from 7.1 expected goals. So they're drastically overachieving. You might expect that to come down soon, hopefully, on Boxing Day. Hopefully they don't score at all. And they've conceded about expected 6.18 expected goals against in the last five, conceding seven goals in that time. And they didn't even hit one. They hit 0.77 expected goals against us when we played them earlier on the season, of course. Aaron McConnelly setting the world alight, who is now fit again. I do believe he did play a bit on Saturday as well. Do you think, Charlie, it might be a case of he comes back to haunt Spurs once again?
I would hope so. He looked really sharp when he came on. He was probably one of the standout performers in a bit of a bad day at the office for most of the team. I think he's got loads of key attributes that can then help affect the game. Run, as Potter's mentioned during the week, running in behind, it's clever movement. I think he's, you know, excels as a kind of fox in the box or running with the ball at his feet. You've done some very good threads on what makes Aaron Connolly such a dangerous young striker, which everybody should go check out, of course, if they haven't already seen them. Touch frequency, his directness, they're all kind of things that have been picked up by your good self, and rightly so, because they are very, very dangerous weapons, something that defenders famously hate, which they hate being run at with the ball. And his second goal against Spurs in the home game was a classic example of that. They were terrified to go near him.
No, I completely agree with that. Appreciate the plug, as always. But please do go check them out if you haven't. I'll link them on the Twitter page. Done an article as well as a few threads on Connolly, who quite impressively, I think, has sort of taken what he did so well at academy level and sort of almost just reapplied that at senior football, which is something I feel like you don't often see of youth players who sort of break through. But to see someone so consistently dominate in one specific area of the pitch, and slow my words already, before any alcohol this Christmas. But, you know, absolutely excellent in that sort of left-hand half space, if you like, if you want to be an edgy hipster in the football world. So just the area between the left-hand channel in the centre area of the pitch, running with that ball and cutting inside, curling it far post. I'm sure a lot of listeners would have seen him obviously drive towards the byline as well and shoot near post. So, as you've already mentioned, sort of his versatility and dangerous weapons that defenders hate. I know Adam Webster's commented on it before as well, in regards, as you mentioned, his touch frequency. Such a good manipulator of the ball. And you say Fox in the box, his first goal against Spurs was sort of really, really well demonstrating that in getting to that cross first and then straight to the rebound first as well. And that hunger, that desire, something the stats don't always pick up of wanting to hit the ball first. So definitely, hopefully Aaron Connolly will score on Boxing Day, which would be quite an interesting thing to see a player who's scored against one opponent in both fixtures and not score against anyone else would be really, really interesting to see. So speaking of good players, should we go on to the dream team element, Charlie Bennett?
Yes, we shall. So welcome back, everybody, to Graham Potter's Dream 11. For once again, we'll recap what this little segment is. So for new listeners, or if you've kind of forgotten what we're doing, we're going through Brighton players through the history, and we're picking out a Dream 11, but from a Graham Potter managerial perspective. So we're not just talking about the best players, the most talented players in their respective positions. We're talking about players who have the attributes that Graham Potter would like to manage. So we're considering things like tactical flexibility, positional versatility, confidence on the ball. I think we kind of mentioned Steven Alzate is a very Potter kind of player.
Yeah, the archetypal, wouldn't he, of someone who's perhaps very more modern, a bit more unorthodox, can fit a range of formations that Potter sort of desires. Of course, has to be competent on the ball with a high passing volume side. And as you say, good with the ball at their feet. Probably a bit more expressive as well, perhaps more your creative sort of players. He might take some risks or perhaps create a bit more.
Exactly. Personality comes into it too. We're looking for players with personality as well. So we've gone through almost all of our defence. Today we're going to be completing our defence. We've gone through the goalkeeper, right wing back, right centre back, central centre back, and left-sided centre-back. We've just got the left wing-back to do in our back five in a kind of 5-2-3. So we've gone for what? Matty Ryan, Bruno, Ben White on loan at Leeds. Yes. Kicked the ball for the Albion, but, you know...
Our best centre-back, of course.
Yes. Lewis Dunk in the centre of defence. And do we have the results from the recent Twitter poll?
We do. Now, I hope you don't cry at these results, but Liam Ridgewell received a whopping 0% of the votes. No. So I'm not sure the listeners, they didn't even consider. 0% is heartbreaking. That's no one. Disappointed. Not angry, just very, very disappointed. Mark Lawrenson took 59% of the votes. So he makes it in alongside Lewis Duncan, Ben White, which on paper is a beautiful sounding back three, isn't it? You think about it, that's just a ridiculously good back three. Of course, with Bruno to the right. Would you like to go first, Charlie Benny, to sort of propose your left wing back options?
Yeah, sure. That is a fantastic back three, I have to say. We'll probably fill a couple more centre backs on the bench as well, maybe one or two. Maybe Adam Webster might not make it onto that bench, considering his performance on Saturday.
Yeah, you got quite a lot of abuse in the West Upper, it must be said. Although I've been sort of questioning his perhaps defensive ability at Bristol Rovers when we played them in the Cup. He got sort of a bit caught out.
Bristol Rovers?
He played against them in the Cup. Not for them, he played for Bristol City, didn't he?
Yeah.
Do you remember we played him in the Cup when Connolly scored?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He played against them.
Okay. I'm just trying to... I thought I'd caught you out there.
No.
Carry on, sir.
That's okay. Apology accepted. No, he played against Bristol Rovers, of course, and got hounded with a lot of abuse, of course, being an ex-Bristol City player. Made a bit of an error in their goal. The striker almost sort of pinned him, and he sort of went forward to challenge for the ball, got spun. And I mean, it was Tom Nichols who scored. Absolute peach of a volley, by the way. Then sort of saw a few question marks going. He is this excellent possible centre-back. He can't deny his ability to run with the balls he showed and build up to a Pies goal against Burnley. His passing range is excellent. But a few question marks. I know at Chelsea he made a bit of an error in conceding the penalty. And again, a bit of an error on Saturday. But I think it's just part and parcel, as you said before, the new system of it's a high-risk, high-reward scenario in regards to the style of football that we play. And perhaps the centre-backs and players we're recruiting more now, as you mentioned, the likes of Steven Alzate, might be a bit more attack-minded. You might compromise a bit more defensively. So that's something to always consider. But yeah, I thought it was interesting about Anne Webster, who of course has not yet made the cut. Might make one off the bench. So yeah, who have you got for left back, Charlie?
I'll just add very quickly while we're on Webster, might as well. Yeah, he did. You're right. He did get a lot of abuse after his performance, and he did not have a good day. His confidence was completely gone after maybe the first 40 minutes. He was absolutely petrified. He didn't want to be on the ball. He was really not in a good place, having made the errors and made another error, nearly let McGoldrick score his first Premier League goal of the season. Little tidbit then there as well. Apparently, McGoldrick has got one of the highest XGs in the league,
and he does for non penalties. Yeah, and he's the only one like the top 50 to not score, which is ridiculous. Yeah. But he's still rated really highly by Blades fans. They all talk about him really, really in high esteem. So I think, from a standard perspective, he must be doing a lot of good work for them in other areas, perhaps off the ball and stuff. But he looked like he wanted it on Saturday. There are a couple of tackles. I can't remember who he challenged. One of them might have been Webster. There were two tackles I recall where he really went through whoever it was in the blue and white. So all seemed to really want it from a mental perspective. So fair play to him for that.
He was good. I think, yeah, I can see why they would rate him, and he did do a really good job for the team. I will mention on Webster, I kind of slated my dad a little bit in one of the recent pods by saying that he didn't really rate Webster and has had enough of him, and he's kind of given me the look sitting next to him after that game on Saturday that I'd made a bit of an error of judgment. I would like to say that he was probably right to point out his some of his deficiencies in terms of defending. But as you say, it's kind of a bit of a trade-off. The one thing I do want to point out, which kind of occurred to me earlier today, when we first signed Duffy, I don't know if you'll recall, and maybe some others will, some listeners might recall this, but he obviously came into the team quite suddenly at Newcastle in a tough game. And then we had the home game at Brentford, and Scott Hogan absolutely
rinsed.
And not a good afternoon for him whatsoever. It was a similar kind of bad afternoon, and people were very, very against Duffy at that point. I think people were just frustrated, questioning the decision to spend that amount of money on a centre back. Obviously, Connor Goldson was out injured at that point, but ready to come back in a short period of time. People were not happy, and
not at all.
Come on, and developed and become such a fantastic member of our squad. I feel something. I think I have confidence that Webster will come good. I think he's already shown great quality. I think that's actually a big difference. Is that he actually started better than Duffy started in a level lower as well. So I think in time, I think he will grow to be an important member of our squad, whether he's starting with your obviously best centre back in the world, Ben White, or bench for him. But he's not rubbish, Brighton fans.
No, he's not. And as you mentioned with Duffy as well, I remember when we signed him, it was right after he'd scored all those own goals and been sent off. And everyone was like, what are you doing? This is like, you couldn't have signed a centre back in worse form. And we only spent, what was it? I think 2.5 million on him. So as you say, players can quite quickly come good, especially with Webster. He's on a bigger stage now in the Prem as well. Perhaps a bit more pressure on him. Hopefully he'll sort of account for those mistakes. And you remember, he scored twice already. So in regards to errors and goals scored, he's perhaps making up for it. So without any further delay, let's finally get onto these left backs. Throw some names at me, Charlie Benny.
Yes, sorry for all the stalling. I promise I have come up with some names. I wasn't just buying myself some time. Yeah, I'll throw them out now. So I think Stephen Alzate has got to be mentioned in there. He's a player who fits very well in the Potter mould and looked really good on his debut away at Newcastle at left wing back. He's very good on the ball. Defensively, obviously, he's probably not as good as maybe some more orthodox left backs, but he has stood out with his technical ability, his intelligence on the pitch, and his positional versatility. We want players who are able to go from left wing back to right forward to central midfield, and he's certainly a player who could do that with ease.
Most definitely. Certainly fits the Potter mould. Tony, I believe, is at Swindon last season. He's actually from Camden as well. In North London. So certainly an excellent player. Only a matter of time, it sort of seems, before he seems to score. Looks definitely excellent, easy on the eye. And a great bit of youth as well, sort of finally We seem to sort of have a few of those players making the jump, Connolly as well, and Leo Ostergaard and Jai Carey are doing quite well, I believe. And St. Pauli, as we mentioned before. So perhaps, you know, one of the product line finally making their way through. In order to sort of bounce off of that, I'm going to throw in a couple of names as well. I'm not sure Vitas Masimenko will get a look in again. So I'll perhaps leave that one, leave that one in the past. One name we do want to throw in, someone who didn't spend too long at the Albion, Wayne Bridge. So I don't think he can not be thrown into the mix for his quality. More clean sheets than goals conceded in the Premier League, for the stats that I could find available on the Premier League website. 100 clean sheets with 92 goals against in his time. 140 wins, 210 tackles, and he's a 74% tackle success rate, which, to be completing 3 out of 4 tackles is pretty good. Going forward, 300 crosses, 21 assists, and 252 accurate long balls. So, can sort of do a bit of everything. Certainly think he, in his prime, would probably have walked into most Premier League sides, let alone any Brighton and Albion one. So, I think he definitely goes into the mix. Have you got anything to build on that, Charlie Benny?
Just to completely affirm that, his ability on the ball, his technical prowess coming into the Poirier team, he was exceptional. He stood out as a real quality player. He was a joy to watch in that season that we had him on loan. And I was thinking exactly the same, that he would be perfect bombing forward. Scored a couple of really nice goals for us as well. I think he would be a good addition to that kind of left-hand side. I'll throw one in as well. I think he got a mention earlier in this segment, and I think we should bring him back in because he has played there and I like that positional element to it. I think it would be good for Potter. Inigo Calderon played at left-back for a short period of time. Very good going forward. Personality on the pitch, passion, very bold, bit of flair. What more could you want?
And scores with his face, doesn't he, as well? Very famously. Believe it was against Leeds, wasn't it, as well? So, you know, player for the big stage. I'd like to add in a fourth of players, perhaps scoring unorthodox goals. One of my favourite loanees we've ever had, Sebastian Pocognoli, was there that famous night at Loftus Road when he stuck one literally in the postage stamp. I don't think he could put it more top corner if he tried. I wouldn't go as far as say integral part, but a very, you know, important figure in that sort of 16-17 season. 3 shots he had, and one of them, of course, that free kick that he scored. A couple of numbers I pulled up were averaged about 3 crosses per game and about 2.5 dribbles per game as well. 8 recoveries in the opposition half per game as well. So can perhaps do a bit of the high pressing that Potter seems to like as well. Of course, this is Championship, so numbers might be a bit skewed, a bit higher than you expect in the Premier League. But I think another player who definitely going forward could offer quite a lot, a set piece to it as well, as we've seen. And sort of, as you sort of alluded to as well, the attacking ability, sort of paramount, certainly can offer going forward. So I think, should we make those our 4 recommendations, unless you have any reason to object, Charlie?
Is that 4? So we've got Alzate, Caldi and
Bridge and Poco.
Oh, yeah, correct.
Excellent.
I just want to throw maybe 2 more out, like just to, as a reminder. Very good on the ball, little bit of a lack of pace, which might be exposed at left wing back. But Marcos Painter, very, very good.
Excellent player.
Technical player. Was the only player in the Poirier promotion team to play every single minute of every game.
There you go. Longevity.
Shows his capability. And then a bit of an old school one as well on recommendation from a slightly older fan acquaintance of mine. Graham Pearce played in the FA Cup final against Manchester United for us. Not necessarily, didn't I was I've been told, I have to say, I don't know too much. I didn't stand out that as being technically good, but apparently had a lot of enthusiasm. Quite a young player, I think he was at the time. He was sort of early 20s and a lot of enthusiasm on the pitch, allegedly. So, I don't suppose you want to consider those two or one of them.
Quite possibly, I'll give it a consideration. We'll have a heated discussion, I'm sure, before we sort of finalise. But please do go and vote in that poll, and that poll will be up alongside the podcast. Please do go and vote. Try and vote for the unorthodox option. We have pushed it for what feels like years now, and our efforts were completely and entirely fruitless previously with Liam Ridgewell. So please do vote for the slightly different option. That'll be absolutely excellent. But since this is an Xmas special, Charlie and myself bestowed it upon ourselves to make it our duty to come up with some Brighton Xmas player names. So combining some Christmas themed items or songs into some current Brighton player names. So Charlie, Benny, would you like to kick off proceedings and throw a name into the mix?
Okay, so I'm gonna level with the listeners. I'm gonna be honest. I kind of forgot about this, and Liam reminded me like just before, like we went to record, and I was like, oh dear. So I've come up with these in about 3 minutes, which Liam can actually testify for. So I think these
are pretty good.
3 minutes, 3 minutes of thinking worth. I've only got the three, but I'll give you one which I think is a standout option. Some people might remember this player from our with Dean years. So the player is, of course, a bit of an anonymous winger, didn't really make too much of an impact. It's Seb Carroll, which, of course, at Christmas, Seb Carroll.
Excellent. Excellent, that one. That's actually quite good. That's quite better than some of the ones that I've got. I'll probably try and go in reverse order of some of these. So I'll hit you one of my worst ones. I thought, since it's in his name, Davy Goodking Venceslas Proper. I thought had to sort of make this. It's a bit of a lengthy one. It's perhaps the biggest issue with that. Go on. Have you got another good one?
Yeah, I thought a great centre back of ours. You know, really a bit of a fan favourite in the Wigdean years. And obviously moved on to play for Aston Villa. He's gone and played for Bournemouth. His Christmas name, of course, is Tommy Elfick.
Oh, that's class. That's excellent. That's very good. That's probably one of the best ones I think we're going to have on here. To rival that, I've gone with Leon Knight Before Christmas.
Very good.
One of the most controversial people on Twitter around, who seems to be managing to offend pretty much everyone. I don't know if you saw the other day, he's offered out like any women's football team to play him and a bunch of people off Twitter, which I'd pay a large amount of money to watch, just to see Leon Knight clatter some completely innocent female in a 50-50 challenge. But he's very funny. Your third and final one, Charlie.
So this is obviously my worst one. It's a bit diabolical, but I was getting desperate. So I hope you'll forgive me for Charlie Oatway in a manger.
Oh, that's very good. That's very similar to one of mine as well. I went for, in spirit of Mr. Yohanbash, Ali Reza Way in a manger.
Oh, okay, I like that. Yeah,
so that's probably one up to my one on that one. But there you go, listeners. Our sort of symmetry in thinking there, without even discussing that. I'll roll off my last few that I've got. I had Danny Holidays, I thought was a topical one. Christmas O'Grady, and finally, the most ingenious one I came up with was Ezekiel Shul Grotto, as in obviously Santa's Grotto, which
good.
Was my best one. I thought of that, and was too happy with myself for that one. So with those adequately discussed, I think it's only right that we move on to a series of unfortunate events since Ali Reza Way in a Manger Yohanbash has last scored. Christmas themed, of course. Charlie, Benny, are you ready to score some points? Excellent. Okay. Question number one. Expecting a good performance from you here. Needs to happen to show the players how to do it for Boxing Day. So since Ali Reza Yohanbash has last scored, we've made over 22,000 passes in the Premier League. So I'm going to link each question to sort of a part of Christmas dinner, as I thought that would be most topical. So, of course, a key root vegetable, parsnips, emphasis on pass in the parsnips, with it being 22,000 passes. Which two Brighton players do you think, in a single game, have made the most passes between each other? So the single highest pass combination between two players in one game this season. Can you guess the pairing, either the players in the pairing or the total number in the opposition?
I'm going to assume that it's Matty. Is it Matty Ryan and someone?
No, it's not. But it's involving a defender and a defensively minded player. I might have given you part of the answer with that.
You've given me Stevens. Thanks very much for that. That's a
well done. Yes.
Yeah, I did actually think originally that it would be Matty Ryan and maybe Webster or Dunk perhaps for receiving the ball from goal.
Webster and Dunk is one of them. It's the second highest. 37 passes between the two of them on Saturday against Sheffield United was the second highest
in the season.
Yes. Okay. So for each game, I looked at our highest combination, the top combination. That is the second of the top combinations. Yeah, so that's second.
I think, as we mentioned previously, I think Webster is very good at progressing with the ball running out of defence. So I'm just going to say that it's Duncan Stevens.
You'd be close. It was Mr. Dan Byrne and Dale Stevens. 39 passes. Can you guess who it might have been against?
When did he have a good game? That sounds a bit harsh on him. He does play well. I do like him as a player. I think he's got a lot to give to our team. I think he's done really well this year. I'm going to say Watford away.
Not far off it. It wasn't an away game. It was Newcastle. I didn't know if you'd assume that with the high volume of passes that we played there.
It just occurred to me, actually, that I was actually thinking about games that we kind of dominated. I know,
of course,
he was playing at left back. I wanted one where he was playing at left centre back, which he was, of course, at Newcastle and at Watford. And both of those could have been
definitely. But interesting to see that again with sort of the defenders dominating. It sort of reflects again how we're trying to perhaps play out a bit more this season. The third highest one was Mr. Dan Byrne again with Leo Trossard at Palace as well, which is interesting. 35 passes made in that. All Webster and Dunk also made 35 passes away at City back in August. So you're on half a mark, I'll give you that, because you got Mr. Dale Stevens in there. So question number two. Of course, since Alireza Hambash last scored, we have signed Leo Trossard. Now, Leo Trossard, born in Genk, not sure if you're aware of that. So Brussels sprouts, of course, one of the most hated vegetables on the Christmas dinner plate. There are 94.5 kilometres between Brussels, the place in Belgium, and Leandro Trossard's birthplace of Genk. So 94.5 or 95, want to round it up. Is that higher or lower than the combined percentage of his cross accuracy and dribble success this season?
95.
Yes, so not as in added together an average, just added together. So if they were both 50% and they were added together, it would make 100, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crossing success and dribble success. Okay. Do you know what? I think he's got a very high cross success rate. I think he...
What would you estimate it at? If you had to guess a number, what would you put it at?
Maybe you only remember the successful ones, I suppose. But I don't think he's got like an extremely high volume, because as you say, he's quite a varied threat. He can run with the ball or he can play key passes. I think, you know, he mixes his game up a lot, so I think that helps his kind of his progressive numbers. I think he probably has a close to 50% success rate with like crosses. I think it's probably about 50%, maybe just okay. Under. I'm going to say it's over.
It's actually not under.
Oh, wow.
Which was interesting. So he's averaged a third of his crosses successfully, which obviously isn't a massively high amount. But then we've obviously done quite well in converting from them. I know Duffy scored, admittedly it wasn't directly from his cross at Palace. Gross sort of helped on his way through to Mapai. But as you mentioned, we've scored from a few of his crosses this season. So both of his assists came from that. And dribble success was just under 50. So one out of two dribbles isn't bad either. But 95 is a very high benchmark. So I don't think one out of three crosses is bad at all. And half your dribbles being successful, if you have a high volume of dribbles like Trossard does, or other players, I know Anderson, Maximan, Sahara sort of up there as well, a high volume of dribbles and a lower success, you can sort of get away with that. But a tricky, tricky question. Moving on to question number three. Since Alireza Hambash has last scored, we've scored 56 Premier League goals. So a useful term to describe quite comfortably beating a team and a food on the Christmas dinner plate, stuffing, of course. So if you stuff a team, we've had three games in Premier League history where we've won by three or more goals. This is when I looked at it. This could be wrong. I think it's right. Do you know what those three games were where we've won by three plus goals?
So three or more, yeah?
Yep, three or more goals.
So that would be West Ham away.
Yep.
Watford away.
Make that four. I forgot Watford away. I have to hold my hands up.
Oh, dear.
I need to do some quick calculations. But whilst you're guessing, that'll be fine.
Okay. Okay. So that's two more, yeah?
Yeah, there are two more. I'm surprised one of them, we've already mentioned the season. I'm surprised you've not got it yet.
Ooh.
It's like a really obvious one. This isn't anything like outside the box.
Oh, no. Oh, Tottenham. Yeah.
Yep.
And let's see. Won't be away. I know. Swansea. Yeah, 4-1.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So that's two games this season that we've won by three or more goals and two games in the first season. So nothing in the in-between season, which is interesting. So for an extra mark, what do you think? I'll give you to the closest 0.5. What do you think our expected goals was in all four of those games? I've just quickly worked it out with the Watford game included.
Okay, so 3-0 at Spurs, 3-0 at West Ham and Watford, and then 4-1. So we had two penalties from the West Ham. So we had one West Ham and one from Swansea, and then the others. One was the Watford goals was an own goal, which doesn't register on XG.
Spot on.
So let's see. I guess we had a kind of similar question, didn't we? I was thinking about the Watford ones. XG is kind of a funny thing. A good indicator generally of like
your a good indicator, definitely.
I will say. So we've got the Izquierdo goal. We actually, the West Ham game away, we actually missed quite a few chances in terms of like Murray went like through just before Izquierdo scored his scorcher. He went through and he had an effort saved by the then West Ham goalkeeper Joe Hart. And I was in the pub in Manchester swearing at the TV thinking that was 2-0, you idiot. How dare you? Like, this was our chance to win an away game. We're probably not going to win another away game all season. And then, of course, we went and won the next away game, away at Swansea.
Yes, that as well. Yeah, Glenn Morris with his thigh that day.
Yes, I was at that game. That was a great day out, to be fair. And then, obviously, Izquierdo went and scored literally 30 seconds afterwards. Now, I'm going to say, let's see, so four. I'm going to say our combined XG was 10 goals. I'm going to say it was 7.4.
You couldn't be much closer. 7.37. That's absolutely excellent. That is a Christmas miracle, I think.
That is just, you know, only
outstanding. Of course. Opta have got the contract be through your door tomorrow that they're trying to sign you. That's absolutely excellent. So let's see if you can maintain that then in question four. I'm actually very impressed by that. It was 2.8 against Swansea that we got expected goals and obviously got four. 2.5 against Spurs and got three, so they were fairly reflective. West Ham away 1.54 and obviously got double that with three. And Watford was 0.5, as you mentioned in previous podcasts, the fact that we had such few shots and the own goal and stuff. And then, of course, Neil Mapai sort of, albeit open goal finish, but from a wide angle, perhaps influenced that as well. So question four, the penultimate one before Christmas. This is probably one of my favourite questions, purely for the wording of this. So since Alireza Iheanacho has last scored, Pascal Gross has made 16 big chances in the Premier League. Now then, the fundamental element of any meat eater's Christmas dinner, of course, turkey. So turkey passes, looking at those. That was my favourite pun of the entire podcast, I think. Gross, as you expect, is the highest of any Brighton player. 2.5 per 90 this season, which ranks him sixth. Who do you think are the next three for Brighton this season? Who are the next three after Gross? And what do you think they've scored in terms of key passes per 90?
No wonder you love this question. You love a bit of Pascal Gross.
It's all about the turkey passes, which I was absolutely buzzing with when I thought about it.
I think, key passes, I would say, just throwing a few names out, I think Trossard, Moy,
yep.
Proper, probably sit quite high.
You've got two out of the three.
OK.
So Trossard and Moy, can you guess a number for them?
Gross leading at 2.5. I would say Moy would be a little. I do actually. I think Trossard a bit closer. Like Trossard not too far behind at sort of 1.5.
So you weren't far off at Trossard.
Okay. So he's, and is Moy closer to Gross or further away?
So Trossard's second. Gross takes the biscuit.
And that does just demonstrate how good that man is.
Yes, yeah.
Making key passes.
Big set-piece merchant, of course, but he's just sixth in the league for key passes per 90. Don't see Kevin De Bruyne getting called a set-piece merchant. Not that I'm annoyed about it, but...
He's annoyed about it, guys.
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll say then, therefore, that Moy probably sits down at 1.1.
One, bang on. So, you again, very close to it. I'd be surprised if you guessed... The next one, someone who featured a lot at the start of Graham Potter's reign and due to injury has sort of phased out a bit, sort of not really managing to find his way back into the team. Again, one of the reasons that Steven Arzate sort of became left wing back is perhaps because of this man who started the season there.
I know who it is now, of course. That's a surprise, actually, that he featured so highly. Solly March and
yes.
This season, I thought he would really excel. And he did okay at the start, but I always thought he could be doing more. And he's kind of got, without being too harsh, a little, kind of progressively worse and less influential away.
He's perhaps regressed, yeah, definitely.
Have come up, like he came on away at Aston Villa, a standout moment. And I was kind of remarking, mentioned my dad again, but yeah, we were kind of talking. He was playing left back, essentially, but we were... Well, left wing back ish. It was a.
This is when we finished with four centre backs on the pitch, isn't it? This was.
Yeah, after the sending off, it was. It was bizarre what he was kind of doing positionally, and you could see he was unsure. He was looking over his shoulder. He should have, in my estimation, a bit of a tangent. He should have pushed up and like tried to kind of threaten the other way. Maybe pushed Gilbert back a little bit at right back and
a very good right back, by the way, as well. I know if you. The people involved in analytics and they speak very highly of him. So yeah, definitely a threat that perhaps needed negating better than he did.
Yeah, he just invited him on, really. But I do say that he was being told to do something. He was being kind of directed from the bench and I just don't think he got it. I don't think he understood what he was meant to be doing. He kind of was very ineffective. But yes, you're right. Gilbert is quite a popular figure in the pundit community. And has earned quite a lot of good reviews and has been tipped to do well this year and has done okay with a couple of assists and things like that. So yeah.
Yeah, he's done quite well. Is he any good from a FPL perspective? I know you're quite hot on that, Charlie Benny.
Yeah, he's certainly been one I've been considering for any fancy football like aficionados or fans out there. If this is something, maybe we'll mention it another time. If this is something that you guys are really interested in, maybe we can touch on it a little bit more. I have become like obsessed with fantasy football recently. I'm doing pretty well this year. I have to say it's gone okay. I've never had like an insanely high finish. I'm normally like just an average player, just for fun. But this year I am currently sitting, I think I'm like 89,000th in the world.
That's pretty good. I'm like 800,000. I've just pulled up the stats now. I've probably had my best week in terms of above average. I scored 56 points this week and the average was 38. So I was pretty happy with that. Sadly, a lot of my points were owed to Dean Henderson and Lundstrom. It was snaky. But I could quite easily see that scenario occurring of us dropping points and keeping a clean sheet. So I thought I might as well profit off of it. but I did, of course, have Lewis Dunk at centre-back as well. So I was hoping for the scenario where Dunk would get a double hat-trick and we keep a clean sheet. And my vice-captain, Gross, who got 1 point. So that was excellent. Question five, as we've moved off on a little bit of a tangent, but that's okay. So yes, possibly cover more FPL in the future. Definitely an exciting analytical topic. The final question, but before Christmas. Since Alireza Yeahanbash has last scored, Matty Ryan has kept 10 clean sheets. Of course, an alternative name for a sheet is a blanket, pigs in blankets being one of the favourite items on the Christmas dinner plates. This season, do you think Matty Ryan has had a higher expected goals against or conceded more goals? So what's higher, expected goals against or actual goals conceded? If it helps your judgment, he's faced 94 shots and had a 72.34% save ratio. And it's close. It's close.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be massive either way. I think that I'm just going through all the goals that we've kind of conceded. And then I think it just swings in certain games, if that makes sense. I think if you take Liverpool or Chelsea, for example, where he was in exceptional form and kind of pulling out wonder saves left, right and centre, obviously he racks up saves despite having quite a high XG against him. But then we have other kind of times where shots go in from weird angles. Zaha, for example, a Hendrick's late goal to equalise at Burnley. So I'm going to say that his XG against expected goals conceded is slightly less.
So you think he's underperformed his... He's a worse keeper than expected goals suggests he is what you're thinking. So he's conceded more than he should have or expected to.
Yes, but not just to be clear, I'm not casting aspersions on him.
No, of course not.
The goals have come from...
You'd be completely correct. And of course, it's worth mentioning on that note, he's conceded 26 with 24.81 expected goals against. Of course, a goalkeeper conceding or expected goals is not purely down to the goalkeeper. A lot of it is defence, as you talk about. And with goals like Hendrick's goal, which is, I think, like 0.04, something ridiculously low. Those sorts of goals perhaps can't lie blame to the goalkeeper as such. Perhaps more of a defensive issue in conceding those sorts of goals. Again, with Zaha, we've spoken about perhaps Montoya being sold a little bit and Ryan perhaps doing a bit better. So you can never really blame either way, purely defender, purely goalkeeper. Usually a combination of the two. So that shows, yeah, perhaps a little bit below average or what you'd expect him so far this season. But I'm sure he'll collect quite a few more clean sheets as sort of the season goes on. Hopefully starting with one not sure what day of the week it'll be, on Boxing Day, be on Thursday. On that note, that is the end of a series of unfortunate events since Alireza Yambash has last scored. Charlie Benny, another excellent performance. You're aging like a fine wine in this, it must be said, in particular with the stuffing-related question, almost bang on with expected goals. So I think InfoGoal will be in touch soon, offering you a job. Which is all from me today. I'd like to wish all the listeners a very Merry Christmas and please do join us soon in between Christmas and New Year, before the Bournemouth game. I probably expect we'll be reviewing the Spurs game, previewing Bournemouth and having a few discussions about the New Year. Charlie Benny, anything for the listeners before we depart?
Not too much from me. Have a fantastic Christmas, all the listeners. Thank you very much for listening. Go vote in the poll. Make sure you go vote for the unorthodox option. I hope you enjoy your Christmas and your Boxing Day. I will be doing the football equivalent of tweeting resist capitalism from an iPhone X by furiously disagreeing with the football broadcasting and stuff that's happening to our game whilst watching every single minute of football.
Yes. I completely agree with you there. Completely ruined it for the fans, but I'm still going to watch every minute of it because I'm able to.
I'm weak. I can't resist it. The football is too much of a call, despite the problems that will bring
in terms of. And their coverage is very good as well. Although is it Amazon or is it BT? I think it's BT, isn't it?
For the 3 o'clock games.
Yes. Yeah.
All Amazon.
Amazon, and their coverage, it must be said, has been excellent so far. From what I've seen of it, it's been very, very good. Which is quite annoying because it makes it harder to pick faults. But yeah, I'm sure, like all the listeners, we'll be tuning in for a full day of that. And of course, the cricket starts on Boxing Day as well. Be good to watch a bit of the cricket too. And the darts then on the 27th as well. So a real sort of packed sporting calendar. And hopefully next time we speak to the listeners, we'll be 3 points stronger after Spurs. So that's all from me. All from you, Charlie?
All from me.
Absolutely excellent. Well, we wish you the merriest of Christmases. Anyone off to Spurs on Boxing Day, hopefully you enjoy and you're rewarded with a sort of a late Christmas present. But besides that, enjoy the festivities and we will see you for the next episode.